to the fourth case this morning, Cole versus Commissioner of Internal Revenue.
Thank you very much, Your Honors, for letting me be here. I am here pro se. I'm a little bit nervous. I haven't done this before, so if you could bear with me. I wanted to start out just by, I brought four hats here because I wear different hats here. My first hat is I'm a lawyer, so I have worked for a law firm and this in the year 2001, which is in question. And then I was a corporate partner of that firm, so I bought the corporate partner hat. And then I did have a tax preparation firm, which was called JC Investments. And I'm also a father, married, and have five children. So I brought these hats mainly for illustrative purposes. Before the court, 2001, the law firm was Bentley Group, doing business as Cole Offices. The corporate partner was Scott Cole, PC, Professional Corporation. The tax prep company was called JC Investments, and then my wife and I filed a joint return.
Speaking of your wife, are you arguing on her behalf, Jennifer Cole's behalf?
Yes, I am.
Well, you're not. You can't do that as a pro se litigant.
Oh, I can't. Okay.
And you haven't entered an appearance on her behalf as a lawyer. So she hasn't signed the brief. So really, would you agree with me that she has submitted nothing in this case?
She has, and I guess the return is joint.
So her appeal would have to be dismissed. Her aspect of the appeal would have to be dismissed. She submitted nothing.
Okay, that's not my intent, but that would.
You would agree that a pro se litigant can't represent another pro se litigant. Wouldn't you?
Yes. Yes.
So she's out. Isn't she?
Have you been admitted to the Seventh Circuit Bar?
I have not.
Are you still licensed to practice?
Yes, I am. In the state of Indiana. What I would like to show. Thanks, Your Honor, for bringing that up. Is briefly that the law firm and the tax prep company and myself filed tax returns. The joint tax return was filed timely. Also, the JC Investments tax prep return was filed timely. And 3 years passed, and no notice of deficiency was sent to either the tax preparation company or myself. Also, the law firm, 3 years had passed, and no notice of deficiency was sent by the IRS. So therefore, under IRC 6502, the IRS cannot audit or issue a notice of deficiency unless they can prove fraud. And fraud, there's direct fraud, which can be shown pretty much by underreporting income. Bank records and 1099s could really easily prove this if the IRS wanted to go out and get bank records. Obviously, false claims of claiming a spouse or a child that they do not have is a direct action of fraud. And also any false or overstating deductions admitted by the taxpayer would be a direct way to prove fraud. However, in this case, there is no direct fraud. What the IRS is asking is that there are what's called acts of negligence that tend to conceal, delay, hinder, or impede the IRS from collecting tax. Now, these aren't direct actions of fraud, but they're called badges of fraud, even though they're acts of negligence. And some examples of those would be underreporting, maybe dealing primarily in cash, failure to keep adequate books or records for the purpose of not allowing the IRS to assess tax. And this would conceal income also and hinder tax assessment. Also, in an audit, not cooperating with the IRS as far as giving them what they would request. But then there's also acts that are negligence but not badges of fraud. And I think that this is important because I think the judge in the tax court used negligent acts but not acts that were badges of fraud and labeled them badges of fraud in her mind, and used those against myself at the lower level. For example, a taxpayer can invest, okay, a law firm that that wants to invest in get a rate of return on their money has the agency to invest and to actually, as long as the income is reported. In the case with the law firm, there was income claimed, and income was claimed, and no deductions were taken. Absolutely zero deductions were taken. And the partner set forth was Darren Cole and Scott Cole, PC, the corporate partner. However, much of the court spent time on the firm's failure to maintain records. And the records that were maintained supported the return, and evidence shows that records were maintained, but some of the records were destroyed in a fire. However, the records that the IRS was looking for in court, as far as contracts with third parties, weren't really necessary and not really relevant because there were no deductions taken. However, that was considered a badge of fraud, but yet that did not delay or hinder or the IRS at all in their tax assessment.
Mr. Cole, if I recall correctly, the tax court included as one of the badges of frauds your reliance upon a theory that if you received income and then made loans to others with that income, that it was not taxable income. Do you recall that finding?
No.
You don't?
I am a partner of the firm. The firm received the income. All checks were written to the firm. There's no evidence whatsoever that any checks were written to me. Now, there is, when it comes to the firm, I made decisions jointly with my partner on how to invest this money. These loans were not deducted as bad debt. There were no deductions whatsoever. So the lower court spent a lot of time on the fact that the firm made these loans, but they were labeling them to me as an individual as making the loans.
That white light reflects your rebuttal time.
It's behind.
You can't see it. It's under your hat.
Move that mom and dad
as
you see the white light.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can go ahead and finish, and you'll run yourself out of time, or you can wait for a rebuttal. You want to do a rebuttal, or you want to just finish?
I'll go ahead and do my rebuttal. That's okay. Thank you.
Mr. Taffy.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Damon Tafe, and I represent the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. Before I get into what I prepared to talk about, I just wanted to respond to Judge Hamilton's question about the tax court's finding. I think on page 22 of the opinion, the court said, and I quote, "Further, even if such transactions were loans, that would not excuse Scott from reporting his legal services fees as income, whether directly payable to him or as a distributive share." So that was one of the badges of fraud that the court found on page 22, and I'll get into the rest of them. But taking a broader view, this case, despite the 15 issues raised on appeal, is really pretty simple. There's a law firm founded by Mr. Cole and his brother Darren that in 2001 received about $1.4 million in revenue. They had a very good year. Now, Mr. Cole, who again is a licensed tax attorney, after creating these structures of LLCs and partnerships that the tax court found had no business purpose, sent the IRS a check for $505 and said, "This is our tax liability for 2001. The IRS reasonably thought that that couldn't possibly be correct, and that's why we're here today. So this is not a case of simply misplacing a couple of documents or recharacterizing things around the edges. This is a massive enterprise to relabel taxable income as non-taxable income, and it just can't possibly succeed. So the IRS did conduct an audit starting in 2003, I believe, and they immediately ran into a problem, which is that despite the burden that the tax code puts on taxpayers to maintain documents from which tax liability can be measured, that's in Section 6001, the taxpayers here could not produce any records whatever. They couldn't produce it for income they received or amounts that they sent out as loans or really anything else. And the taxpayer did say that some of these records were destroyed by a fire, but nonetheless, the IRS was faced with a very difficult task, which is figuring out how such a large amount of income could have led to such a small reported tax liability. So they undertook to reconstruct what happened in that year, and they used the bank deposits method and the specific items method, two long, time-honored methods that courts have endorsed of doing that. And they found that taxpayers' taxable income, Mr. Cole, Scott Cole in this instance, was about $1.25 million in 2001. From that, it determined a $550,000 deficiency and a $417,000 fraud penalty that follows as a matter of course under the tax code. And the tax court found, after a trial that spanned a couple of days, that that was a reasonable reconstruction. So immediately, the burden is on the taxpayer to show that the court committed clear error in that finding, and it's the taxpayers offered no evidence as to why that's the case. So I'm going to talk a little bit about these sub-entities, of course, answering any questions the court has. But I first want to talk about one thing Mr. Cole did mention, which is the timeliness issue and the three-year statute of limitations. For two reasons, that simply doesn't hold water here. The first and most obvious is that in cases of fraud, which the court found to exist, there is no statute of limitations. Secondly, even if fraud is not sustained, under Section 6501E1A, the statute of limitations actually is 6 years rather than 3 years if gross tax liability is understated by 25% or more. In this case, the IRS determined, the tax court found, that the actual gross income was $1.2 million, and the amount that he reported was $100,000. So clearly within this rubric. And the actual deficiency notice was sent on April 11, 2008, which is less than 6 years from April 15, 2002, the date that taxable return was due on 2001 revenue. So respectfully, the timeliness issue is simply a red herring here. I'll just go through a little bit of what these LLCs did. But ultimately, we can just fall back on the tax court's finding here, and I quote, it could divine no business purpose for the LLCs that Scott established, and quote, it appears they served as conduits to hide income Scott earned from providing legal services and preparing tax returns. There's nothing in the appellant's brief to suggest that that finding was erroneous. There are four entities I'd like to talk about. The first is the Bentley Group, which is this law firm that Mr. Cole operated with his brother, Darren. Again, $1.4 million of deposits in 2001, at least $1.2 million of which was from Scott Cole himself. There's zero documentation kept, but the documentation that the IRS was able to get in the discovery process from the bank showed that Scott Cole used this money essentially as a personal checking account. He made a $50,000 loan to his mother, a $10,000 loan to his brother's roofing company. As the court noted, there is simply not the law that amounts that are loaned out are not taxable income. It's not even colorable. But just to further state the point, none of these loans were documented as loans. None of them were ever repaid, even a dollar, so far as the IRS can tell. So all we're really left with, and all the tax court was left with, is the taxpayer's word. And the word simply doesn't add up to reality. He says that as far as the Bentley Group goes, no return was filed until 2004. And he said, well, that's negligence. Respectfully, it's more than negligence in this case, as the tax court found, because it has to do with who was a partner in the Bentley Group in 2001. When this thing was founded in 1997, it was owned 50% by Scott and 50% by Darren. And the first document, the first piece of written evidence that suggests that's not the case, was filed in 2004, which is after the audits in this case began. So that immediately raises suspicions as to why it wasn't filed earlier, as to why these things happened. And the tax court found that there is no evidence whatsoever to support the idea that Scott C. Cole PC, this personal corporation, was a partner in the Bentley Group in 2001 rather than Scott Cole himself as an individual. That finding, again, has not been rebutted through evidence, and we think it's reasonable. The second entity is JAC, which is the investment company, I believe he termed it, that he owned in conjunction with his wife. Again, in this one, $95,000 of total deposits in 2001, $80,000 of which was found to be taxable by the IRS. But Scott Cole reported self-employment income of $1,000. And again, he did this by characterizing himself as 1% holder of this partnership, and 99% was passively owned by his wife, who didn't earn any money toward it whatsoever. And he would get money from checks made out to him, specifically as an individual, and deposit them in JAC services, and then say that the income is not taxable to him. It's just not the way the law works. This court said in the Truesdale case that you can't avoid income by assigning it. The third entity is Scott C. Cole, which is this corporation that Mr. Cole was the sole shareholder in that was allegedly but not provably a partner in JAC or in the Bentley Group in 2001. The tax court found there was no evidence to support the claim that it was involved in the Bentley Group in 2001. 18J is the only document, that Exhibit 18J is the only one that even mentions Scott C. Cole in this case. It doesn't hold up to scrutiny. And finally, the tax court also noted that there were miscellaneous other amounts paid to Scott Cole that were not reported. Specifically, $59,000 of checks were written to Scott Cole himself, and he deposited them in his wife's personal checking account. They spent the money on music lessons and mortgage payments and all sorts of normal things, but neither Scott nor his wife reported these as income. It's not the way the law works. So I think it's pretty clear that the tax court acted reasonably here. The IRS acted reasonably in reconstructing the income in question. And although his brief says that the tax court never mentioned what the badges of fraud were, a fair reading suggests that Sure, it didn't list them. It's A, B, C, and D. But it contained a long and reasonable discussion stating, among others, that failing to provide documents, failing to report income, commingling assets, which I just described, business and personal assets, forming multiple business entities with no discernible purpose, and asserting fraudulent, or not fraudulent, but asserting frivolous legal arguments, all of these are badges of fraud. All of them are present here. We respectfully request that this court affirm the tax court's decision.
Thank you. Counsel, how much time? Yes,
2 minutes. Your Honor, if I may, $1.2 million was paid to coal offices.
That was income, wasn't it?
That was income to coal offices. We don't dispute that. All of a sudden, this partner is K1, $1.1 million. This partner is the one that's liable. How does Scott Cole become individually liable for a corporate partner? Okay, that's my number one question. It was paid to the law firm, and it was there were no deductions made, so records are a red herring. Okay, that's what they're trying to throw smoke. This partner is the one that's liable for the taxes, and when we file returns to show bad investment losses not accepted by the IRS, this tax prep company.
You're saying the $1.1 million was badly invested? Is that the theory?
No, I'm not. I'm saying that there was a loss in future years. There was investments made in the market with companies. The firm did buy other companies. Okay, he is singling out an investment here and there to a friend, okay, or to a family member, okay, a loan. But the majority of the loans were invested in the market by the law firm, okay? These were investment loans. The law firm wanted to make money.
And did Scott C. Cole, P.C., file a timely return and pay taxes on that income?
Scott C. Cole filed a return, but that was rejected. They said, no, you earned it individually. Okay, and they're not
because
accepting
because there was no record that
because,
Scott C.
Because
Cole
they don't
was,
want to be, believe
because,
that Scott C.
Excuse me, because oh. There was no evidence that Scott C. Cole PC actually was the partner back in 2001. Correct?
There was testimony evidence,
but not testimony the court was required to accept.
Right. The court had discretion to accept whether that occurred or not.
Okay.
And on as far as he mentions 59,000, this company here, JC Investments, reported $146,000. And the $59,000 that is representing that came to Scott Cole, yes, there was commingling of funds in JC Investments. However, can you take badges of fraud from one and put them onto the other? Can you take badges of fraud that existed, if they existed, if you're considering acts of negligence that delay, are you going to apply them to Scott Cole's personal return?
Thank you, Mr. Cole.
Okay, thank you.
Taken under advisement.